Saxon held up his hand. Everyone just stop. He seared his gaze into Braden's innocent eyes and narrowed his vision like a laser. Vampire, look at me. Tell me about these visions. Tell me about the black and red rose. Now. Braden shifted gears in a millisecond, going from apologetic youth to burgeoning seer in the powerful house of Jaden, and his voice reflected the shift. About 1 week ago, he spoke clearly. I started getting headaches, but that's really nothing new. I'm always picking up on emotions, controversies, you name it. Things going on behind closed doors within the house of Jaden. Usually it passes, and it doesn't have any deep meaning. He furrowed his brows in concentration. Only this was kind of weird. At first I saw... No, I didn't actually see it. I more like felt it. A two-toned rose that was crimson and black, and the black petals were swallowing the red. Saxon held up one finger, needing a moment to process the fledgling vampire's words. He ran his hand through his hair, considering the potential implications. What do you mean by swallowing, son? The black petals swallowed the red? Braden shook his head. I don't know exactly. I mean, it was just... The black half of the rose sort of took over the entire flower. It swallowed it by eclipsing the red. Nakari placed his hand on Braden's shoulder and gentled his voice. Tell him about the other impressions, Braden. The words you also heard, or felt. Braden nodded, glancing at his boots for a moment, thinking it over. When he once again raised his head, his features were stark with concentration. Again, I didn't really hear anything, Saxon. I just sort of felt the sounds, the syllables. It's hard to explain. Go on, Ramsey barked. Santo shot his younger brother a harsh look. Ramsey, he's trying. He turned toward Braden and nodded. Just take a deep breath and think things through, son. It's important that you get this right, that you don't leave anything out. If you can do that quickly, that's great. But if you can't, that's okay, too. He gestured with his chin toward Ramsey. He's fine. We all are. We just want to get this right. Braden nodded with understanding, then swallowed his angst. Passion, death, and foreboding. He said bluntly. That's what I sort of heard. It was like the crimson rose represented passion, and the black rose represented death and foreboding. Saxon cut in. Yeah, Braden said. Exactly. Saxon felt like his world was suddenly spinning on its axis. Oh, gods, this wasn't good. Why was this psychic kid having visions about Saxon's rare and secret rose? You said at first... This was the vision you saw at first. How did the vision change? Braden glanced at Christina, and she flashed a tentative but reassuring smile.
Oh, hell, Bray, she shrugged. I'm with Nakari. Tell them everything you can, every vision you've had.
Braden nodded. So over time, the rose kind of changed. Instead of being a single flower with two-toned petals, it was a single stem that had split in two. Two separate roses, each a different color. One crimson, one black. And the black rose grew stronger and took over, while the red rose wilted on the vine. Son of a bitch, Saxon muttered, turning to regard Nakari. Wizard, what the hell does that mean? Trust me, this is very important. Nakari shook his head. No idea, warrior. You tell me. What part of Braden's words ring true, and why? Maybe we can go from there. Saxon was almost desperate to get at the truth, though he couldn't explain the urgency. Just the same, he searched his heart, trying to find the right way to phrase it. In the back of my estate, I have a secret garden, something I've been building for centuries. It's a rose garden erected for my destiny, something I've always kept private. To me, it was sacred, special, a way to offer homage to the gods. And to my female. He quickly pressed on. There was no time for history. One of the blossoms in the greenhouse is from Halfidi, Turkey, fed by the river Euphrates. It's half crimson and half black. And the natives of the small village where it grows believe the flowers represent both passion and death and foreboding, depending on its dominant shade. I showed it to Kyla the night we met. The room grew ghostly quiet. Saxon, Nakari finally spoke. Have you had any misgivings about this mating? About your blood moon? The thought that something might be off? He held up his hand to delay Saxon's response because he wasn't finished talking. Braden shared his concerns with me, and I even viewed his visions, but we couldn't make any connections. We did, however, establish a timeline. He started seeing the roses the night of your Cetus blood moon, maybe a couple hours earlier. It rattled me enough to say something to Ramsey and Santos. Santos nodded and Ramsey grunted.
Yeah, that's why we've been stalking you like a couple of love-struck teenagers, Ramsey said. Calling or checking in every hour on the hour, Santos added.
Nakari repeated his question. Have you had any misgivings, warrior? If so, there's no time like the present. Don't hold back. Saxon nodded.
Yeah, he admitted quietly. I have. Quite a bit.
Nakari shut his forest green eyes, and when he reopened them a few seconds later, they were glowing.
The first vision was describing the origin of your blood moon.
He spoke in an eerie, almost disembodied voice.
One rose is one girl. One soul, one secret. A flower with two different faces. And one of the faces, the personas, is far more deadly than passionate. The second vision describes the blood moon's progression. Two roses split from a single vine. Two girls, two souls. But only one origin.
Saxon, your destiny is also a twin. One of their souls is black, filled with death and foreboding, while the other is filled with passion and love. But this one is withering on the vine. His eyes grew murky and ominous.
Whoever she is, she's dying.
He's right, Braden interjected. His burnt sienna eyes flashed with knowing, and he emphatically nodded his head.
Nakari nailed it, but I can take it a step further. When you claimed Kyla, you were very close to both sisters, and that's why the rose was intertwined. But as time has ticked on, there's more distance between you. Between you and your true other half. Kyla has grown bolder, and her sister has grown weaker. I think you claimed the wrong female.
Deanna Dubois Silavasi sidled up behind Nakari, still holding Sebastian in one arm, as she slipped the other around Nakari's waist, partly to provide him comfort and partly to bring him out of the trance.
Wizard,
she whispered softly in his ear, although all the vampires could hear her.
I saw her wrist earlier. She has the markings of Lord Cetus etched into her flesh. Are you and Braden certain?
Saxon brought his clenched fists up to his forehead and grasped at his hair in fury, his body beginning to tremble.
Saxon? Can you hear me? It's Kiera.
The memory of that dim, indistinct voice assailed his consciousness.
She doesn't have the markings of Cetus on her wrist, he snarled. It's a fucking tattoo!
Nikolai!
Marquise gasped, shimmering out of view. Deanna spun around in a panic.
Where's Siapori?
Saxon sprang into action.
Santos, get the tracker to the brownstone. Call Julia now.
Saber,
he shouted on a community telepathic bandwidth.
Check every door and window. Don't let Kyla leave.
And then he turned to Kagan and Ariel Silavasi, who were standing in the background next to Jocelyn and Nathaniel.
Kagan,
his voice trembled with emotion.
I have a terrible feeling we're going to need a healer upstairs.
He was just about to give a directive to Dario and Lily, ask them to sit down with Braden and go over each of his visions piece by piece, see if they could garner more information, when Siapori's blood-curdling scream shook the brownstone's rafters. Everyone froze.
26.
Kiera screamed like there was no tomorrow as the vampire hunter strapped her to the cold stainless steel table, looped her wrists through the metallic cuffs at the top, and secured her feet with the leather straps. She tried to plead for mercy, but Owen stuffed a cloth inside her mouth and pressed the archaic dagger to her throat.
Shh,
he whispered maniacally, sliding the flat length of the smelted iron against her convulsing esophagus. You wouldn't want me to slip and slit your throat. She gasped, taking in a mouthful of the dirty cloth, her eyes growing wide as saucers in fright. Her arms, stomach, thighs, and calves stiffened in revulsion as he sliced the damp T-shirt and sweats off her body, leaving her clad in her rain-soaked panties. The vile abrasive music streamed through the speakers all around her, even as the incense assailed her flared nostrils. When at last Owen retrieved the ancient clay basin from the tabletop and rotated it so the blood-red cross was facing forward, she closed her eyes and prayed for death. She heard him snap a pair of latex gloves onto his hands, and her terror gave way to panic. She bucked and writhed against the table. She tugged at her arms and twisted her legs, desperately trying to break free. She didn't care if she broke her wrists and her ankles. It would be a small price to pay for her freedom. The chains attached to the cuffs moaned like they were being rattled by ghosts. The leather would not give way. And then Owen began to carve a treble clef into her right trembling thigh. She knew because he was narrating his sadism, and her eyes flooded with tears. She was helpless, unable to move, unable to scream, and unable to stop the torture. As sound and smell and pain came together in a morose, inevitable dance, Kiera rocked back and forth on the table, giving way to the rhythm of despair. This was real. It was happening, and she could do nothing to stop it. Her mind searched for an escape, clinging to a twofold image, a bright white light and a dark embracing tunnel, the moment when her spirit would release from her body. With all her will and desire, she beckoned to death. Come quickly. Kyla Sparrow placed the heels of both hands over the heel of the shoe, locked her elbows in place, and leaned forward into the thrust. And that's when everything happened at once. Siopori screamed in the doorway, like the devil had just assailed her. An invisible battering ram drove the air from Kyla's lungs, and the sharp pointed spike of the heel skittered to the left before lodging into the child's pectoralis rather than his heart. The baby came awake with a squeal and a howl, and his sharp tiny fangs latched onto Kyla's fingers, even as Marquis Silavasi flashed into view, his eyes ablaze with rage-induced crimson. He snatched Kyla by the throat with a powerful, unyielding hand, hauled her off the carpet, and Nikolai's teeth tore through her flesh. Siopori was there in an instant, lifting the babe from the crib and passing him swiftly to Kagan Silavasi, who immediately began to check his injury. Kyla didn't have time to watch. The infuriated ancient master warrior tossed her across the room, slamming her into the wall, and then he lunged like a dark archangel, using a pair of raven-black wings to propel him. His fangs were protruding from his gums, his claws were lethal and extended, and his enormous muscular body was quaking with the need to annihilate. Kyla screamed in abject terror, shielding her neck with her arms, as the feral vampire sprang at her throat, prepared to tear out her jugular. And then, just like that, Saxon was there, wrapping his powerful arms around Marquise's shoulders and yanking backward for all he was worth. "No, Master Warrior!" he shouted. "Do not!" Marquise broke free from Saxon's grasp, spun around in a whirlwind, and dove at Kyla again. This time, Ramsey Olaru intercepted the murderous vampire.
"Marquise, snap out of it!"
His voice detonated through the room like a hammer striking an anvil, but Marquise could not be restrained. He tossed the powerful sentinel to the side as if he were nothing but a rag doll and gnashed his canines at Kyla. She backpedaled into the corner, relieved to see Saxon, Ramsey, Santos, Nathaniel, and Saber all surround the homicidal beast at once.
"Stop!"
Saxon grunted, trying to wrench Marquise's arm behind his back.
"She is the only link to my true destiny. If you kill her, my female's life will be lost." "If you kill her,"
Ramsey snarled,
"Saxon's life will be lost. Damn it, warrior, stop!"
Kyla's throat convulsed in terror. "She is the only link to my true destiny." Oh, shit. Holy shit. Saxon knew. But how? Yes, she had just attacked a baby, But as long as Saxon believed Kyla was his destiny, his only means of fulfilling the curse, she did not believe he would kill her. He couldn't. But now? Her mouth grew suddenly dry, and her stomach heaved with the need to retch. Marquise could not be restrained. He fought all the other vampires like he was a drowning man, and they were the crashing waves standing between his lungs and fresh air. And then a singular bone-chilling voice penetrated the mayhem.
Warrior, cease!
See Apori Demir Silavasi sauntering forward, her pupils blazing as if on fire. She raised a trembling, elegant hand and stared daggers through the feral vampire.
As long as you are a son in the hallowed house of Jaden, my brother's hallowed namesake—
Her sweet, lyrical voice became frigid.
You will submit to the laws of your king. You will honor the ancients and obey your elders. And I am the eldest living monarch in this valley.
She paused to take a deep, calming breath.
Lest there be any confusion from any male here, and that includes the three of you, Saxon, Ramsay, and Santos.
She eyed each vampire in turn before focusing her icy glare on Kyla.
Then I shall say this once, loud and clear. I claim the right to blood vengeance.
She allowed the words to resonate throughout the frenetic space, and Kyla slumped on the floor.
Do whatever you must to retrieve whatever information you wish, but you will not kill her. None of you. That honor will be mine.
Raising her chin, she turned her attention to Saxon and spoke regally.
Sentinel, when you are through with this human excrement, whenever that is, you will deliver her to me, conscious and alert. Is that understood?
Without awaiting an answer, she softened her gaze and appraised her mate yet again.
My love, I must go with Kagan, Ariel, and Nikolai to the clinic now. I would appreciate it if you would accompany me.
That seemed to do the trick. Marquise snapped out of it. He drew back his shoulders, stretched his neck, and rolled his jaw from side to side, retracting his wings and his fangs. The bulging muscles in his arms pulsed in multiple rippling spasms before growing slack, and he backed away from Kyla. But not before staring her down and growling.
You are going to wish I had been the one to end your existence in this bedroom, he taunted.
And then he turned his back, strolled to Siapori's side, and left the bedroom with Kagan, Ariel, and Nikolai. The vampire warriors parted like the biblical Red Sea, allowing Saxon to approach Kyla directly, and she knew it was time to face the music. Still, she had no intentions of giving up that easily.
Saxon!
She cried in desperation, trying to circumvent his anger before he unleashed it.
It's not what you think, I swear. I'm not sure what you believe or what you've been told, but I—
He snatched her by the hair, hauled her off the ground, and slammed her against the wall.
I may not have the right to kill you, but I won't hesitate to cut out your tongue. Speak one more lie to me, Kyla. Just one.
He bent so close that the tip of his nose brushed against her forehead.
Just one.
She shivered, averting her eyes. Oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. She didn't know this vampire. Without a moment's hesitation, he thrust into her mind and began to retrieve her recent memories. She knew because it felt like an ice pick bayoneting her skull, shredding the fragile gray matter, and she could see, she could actually feel, the memories replaying against her frontal lobe. Like weeds being plucked from a garden, wrenched out by the roots, Saxon began at the present day and worked methodically backward, stopping at the night of the Cetus blood moon.
Son of a bitch!
He finally snarled, releasing his hand and dropping her to the ground. He turned to regard his brothers.
Her sister's name is Kiera. My destiny's name is Kiera, and they were together that night at the bar. Kyla belongs to a vampire-hunting society, and she took Kiera's place.
His voice dropped to a low, threatening purr.
She had the markings of Cetus tattooed onto her wrist, and then she gave Kiera. She offered her twin to a couple of humans in a dark blue van.
He scoffed in disgust.
She doesn't know where they took her sister, whether Kiera is dead or alive.
because she never cared enough to ask.
He shut his eyes, slowly shook his head, and whispered,
Nakari, wizard, you need to summon your father, because this shit just gets better and better. The headhunter, the leader of Kyla's militia, goes by a familiar name, Xavier Matista.
A collective gasp reverberated across the room, followed by several strings of Romanian curses, but Saxon didn't have time to react. He didn't have time to go into detail or to offer any further explanations. His brow was creased with worry, and his pupils were dilated with focus as he prowled across the floor, bent to retrieve Kyla's dainty red purse, and withdrew her cell phone from the center velvet-lined pocket, tossing it to Santos.
Brother, I need you to dissect this shit. Get everything off this phone. Photographs, passwords, addresses, texts, emails, social media accounts. And most important, recover anything that has been deleted in the last 7 days. Can you do that?
Santos nodded, his complexion noticeably pale, and Kyla couldn't help but read his mind, even from her human perspective. He had to be wondering if it wasn't too late, if he was staring at his brother's corpse. If Kiera was already dead, then Saxon was already lost. But to his credit, he opened Kyla's phone and swiped along the bottom.
That's going to take me a little time, especially the recovery piece, he informed Saxon. Can't just pull the memories out of a piece of metal and plastic like a human mind. I'm going to need to take this home where I can access my tools and equipment.
And then he paused.
What's the password for the phone?
Kyla pursed her lips together, and Saxon flew across the space, squatted in front of her, and slapped her so hard her right molars came loose. She spit out a wad of bloody drool.
5-7-6-6-6.
There was no point in lying. Saxon would either beat it out of her or take it from her mind. Besides, she couldn't imagine anything in there that would lead them to Kiera. She honestly didn't know where her sister was, and she didn't keep any vampire-hunting contacts stored in her phone, at least not by their real first and last names, and not with any data other than phone numbers. She wasn't that stupid. Saxon stood up and faced the room, dismissing Kyla like so much garbage, like the two of them had never made love, like he'd never even known her. And his calloused, cold indifference was more cutting than any words of condemnation, or acts of retribution could ever have been.
Ramsay, he said with unerring purpose, you and Saber take the female to Napoleon's manse. Lock her in the holding cell and interrogate her.
The female? Kyla gulped.
I'd rather go with you, brother, Ramsay said resolutely. I know, Saxon replied, but no one will be more motivated to get answers than you. You're my twin. I need you to do this for me, Ramsay.
He raised one shoulder in a compromising shrug.
You can meet up with me when you're done, if the need still exists. Santos can do the same once he's evaluated the phone. I need as much information as I can get, warriors. We may not have much time.
He didn't wait for a reply. The last sentence was too heavy, too ominous, too loaded with implications. It could already be too late.
Oh, Saxon pressed on, clearly ignoring the elephant in the room. And you might want Kitaro and Nakari with you, in case there's any more information about Xavier, or you require the intervention of magic.
His eyes scanned the room, searching for another familiar face, and halted in the crowded doorway.
Dario, you, Conrad, and Lily stay with Brayden. Sit down and go over those visions with a fine-tooth comb. Brayden may have more knowledge of people, places, and events locked inside that psyche than any of us. And Nathaniel.
He waited for the devilish vampire to step forward and inclined his head with respect.
You're coming with me and the tracker.
With that, he finally revealed his frustration. His hands pumped nervously, clenching into fists, and he grit his teeth in anger.
Just where the hell is Julian, anyway?
Right behind you, Sentinel.
A deep, raspy brogue echoed in the room as a monstrously large vampire shimmered into view, his short mahogany hair cut in an angular taper, his moonstone gray eyes brimming with singular purpose, his harsh, unyielding countenance filling the crowded space like vapor. Beneath the breast of his black leather trench coat, Kyla could see the head of a battle axe sheathed below one armpit, and what appeared to be an M4 carbine strapped underneath the other. She shuddered.
"Then let's get this show on the road," Saxon growled.
As the dark, merciless vampire, with black and red banded hair, palmed the back of Kyla's neck and scooped her off the floor, her knees finally buckled, and she vomited. Saxon had totally abandoned her. Nothing and no one could help her now. And the nightmare was only beginning.
27.
Saxon Olaru threw open the doors to the Lodo bar and stormed inside the dimly lit space. Nathaniel Silavasi followed on his heels, immediately ensnaring the attention of every patron in the establishment. He pitched his voice to a low, silken growl and hissed two words,
"Get out."
The entire room scattered. Patrons, waitresses, even the bartender scurried to the nearest exit, leaving their drinks where they sat. The owner of the bar, who had been sitting in a booth toward the back, left his ledgers on the chic oblong table and followed the rest of the humans. Julian Lacusta went right to work.
"Where was Kyla standing the first time you saw her?"
Saxon pointed toward the back of the bar, the hall that led to the kitchen, just feet from the door to the restroom.
"She was standing right there," he said, "clutching her left wrist in her right hand, staring at the markings and biting her bottom lip."
Anger pulsed through him in waves. By all the gods, she had played her hand well. Julian stalked to the area, dropped into a squat, and leveled both hands, palms down, about an inch above the floor. He closed his eyes and angled his head to the side, as if listening. While all vampires could track prey with savage proficiency, Julian was a legend. Saxon had no idea what he was feeling for, or listening to. But the male could filter through vibrations a month or two old, siphon residual emotions from the kinetic imprints they left behind, read patterns in the dust and light, or enter the shadows, and retrieve their hidden secrets. Julian nodded and stood, spinning with feral grace toward the entrance to the bathroom. Saxon and Nathaniel followed, careful to give the tracker space and to remain unobtrusive in the background. Julian stood in the center of the tiny one-room bathroom, turned 360 degrees in a circle, then prowled toward the mirror and placed his palm against the glass. He turned the faucet on and off, as if mirroring someone else's movements, then glanced over his shoulder toward the small rectangular window on the far side of the lavatory, where he absently glanced at the sky. And then his focus narrowed, his pupils visibly constricted, and he backed his way toward a heavy metal door that led out into an alley, making note of what looked like a freshly installed deadbolt.
"The owner suspected a break-in, but he had no idea about the kidnapping."
Saxon's heart dropped into his stomach. He had seen the scene play out in Kyla's mind, in her memories, but this was altogether different. Standing here, watching Julian as he worked, knowing that he had been so close, so very close to his true destiny.
"She dropped her purse," Julian grumbled, speaking to no one in particular. "Kyla picked it up and tossed it into the garbage when Kiera wasn't looking."
Saxon nodded. That matched with Kyla's memories. Julian slammed a steel-toed boot against the heavy alley door and strolled into the fresh night air, pacing the distance between the doorway and something else, as if measuring Kiera's frantic steps.
"One assailant pulled her backward with his hand over her mouth."
He closed his eyes and grew still.
"The other one held her arms."
He reopened his eyes, made the shape of a box with his hands, and squatted once again to touch the gravel with the pads of his fingers.
"The van was here, facing south."
He began to scan the pavement, his moonstone gray eyes emitting soft red beams, as he toggled between supernatural and infrared vision, recording the pattern of the tires, possibly the weight of the vehicle, and any tracings left behind.
"Did you get a license plate number from Kyla's memories?"
he asked Saxon. Saxon shook his head. Then, realizing the vampire wasn't looking at him, he projected his voice.
"No. Kyla never looked down at the plates."
Julian nodded. He sniffed the air several times, his dark lashes fluttering, and Saxon knew that he wasn't just smelling the air, but analyzing the scents. Hundreds of thousands of week-old scents, sifting through each one,
identifying it, categorizing it, memorizing the ones he needed. Time seemed to stand still as Saxon and Nathaniel waited, growing increasingly anxious. But this couldn't be rushed. If the tracker could get a clear enough bead on the van, on every scent that came from the vehicle, he could track it for miles just like a dog. They all could. Only Julian could do in minutes what might take another vampire days or weeks. He'd spent centuries of his life mastering this craft.
"Well?" Nathaniel asked, betraying his impatience.
Julian stood up and grunted.
"Yeah, I've got it."
Without another word, he released a powerful set of mahogany wings, rendered his body invisible, and shot into the air. Saxon and Nathaniel followed suit. Kiera Sparrow whimpered through the gag as her body hummed with pain. She was nauseous, she was dizzy, and the room was spinning, twisting, from never-ending vertigo. If agony was a river, then Kiera was caught in a turbulent stream, being slammed against the rocks, held against the bottom, then swept away yet again with the current. And there was no escape in sight. Owen had carved a treble clef into her right thigh, a bass clef into her left thigh, piano, mezzo-piano, forte, and fortissimo into the tops of her hands and her feet. He had carved the entire outline of a violin over her stomach, chest, and breasts. And now, he was finally done carving. Kiera didn't know whether to be terrified or relieved. She was so very tired. So very tired. She wanted the whole ordeal to be over with, but she knew what came next. An extravagant white maple and stainless steel grandfather clock began to ring in the background, the polished chrome pendulum ticking off 10 metallic chimes against the hanging white shells. So it was 10 p.m.? She watched through tear-drenched eyes as John, Mike, and Nick adjusted their hooded black robes, removed the sashes from around their waists, and slowly stepped out of their underwear. What was the point of all this slow, methodical drama, drawing out the ceremony? Torture was torture, murder was murder, and rape was rape. As the clock struck 10 and the chimes fell silent, Owen pressed Kiera's left arm against the table and placed the tip of the dagger against her radial artery, prepared to slit her wrist. So it had already come to this? She bit down on the cloth like a horse with a bit and waited.
28.
Saxon O'Laru swept his hand through his hair, trying to calm his nerves. Tracking the van from the alley had been painstaking and slow. There were times when Julian had lost the scent, and they'd had to return to the ground. Track forward, track backward, take a different tack. It was almost as if the van was everywhere, north and south, east and west, all at the same blasted time. And as anxious as Saxon was becoming, something inside his gut was literally screaming. He couldn't fault Julian for the confusion. No doubt Kiera's attackers had driven the thing from one end of the city to the next over the last 7 days, and that was beyond Julian's purview, arranging the clues in linear time. All he could do was track what he found. At last, they came to a stop in a dark, secluded space and approached an industrial wood door. Silent as cats, they crept forward, ready to pounce, as Julian nodded his head. His ears humming, his stomach lurching, Saxon glanced at his watch. It was 10 o'clock.
"Dear gods, please, let my destiny be alive," he prayed, and then he gave the tracker the thumbs up.
Saxon held his breath as Nathaniel thumbed his polished silver stiletto, with its custom handcrafted grip. Julian Lacusta slammed his fist into the center of the wood, splintering it into 1,000 pieces, and the vampires rushed inside. The smell of fear, sweat, and blood was pungent in the dark, rusty space, thick with cobwebs, dirt, and old smelly hay. What the hell? There was no one there.
"It's a godforsaken barn," Julian snarled,
flying up to the rafters, in and out of old stalls, and checking under piles of rubble. Nathaniel kicked over barrels, studied hanging archaic implements, and made his way to a large wooden bench about the size of a kitchen island.
"No," he argued, shaking his head as he fingered a blindfold, gestured toward several rickety shelves stocked with glass vials and mysterious containers, and pointed out an assortment of archaic medical equipment. He whistled low beneath his breath.
It's a lab.
Saxon was about to explode. Everything about the place was wrong. And if his gut had been churning before, it was practically curdling now, his esophagus filling with bile.
Where the hell is she?
He shouted, uncaring as a pair of wooden beams crashed down from the ceiling.
And what the hell is this shit?
He picked up the blindfold and sniffed it, and his eyes filled with moisture from fury.
Julian!
He barked. The tracker flew to his side, sniffed the vile cloth, and nodded.
She was here.
With a werewolf, Nathaniel hissed. Saxon booted a stiff metal chair across the barn, threw his head back like a lion, and roared his rage, no longer capable of restraining it.
Sentinel!
Nathaniel admonished as the uneven earthen floor beneath their feet began to rock back and forth and quake.
Put a lid on it.
He placed a strong supportive hand on Saxon's shoulder and squeezed.
We will track the damn van all over this city if we have to. We're gonna find these sons of bitches.
Saxon shook his head.
You don't understand, Nathaniel. We're out of time.
Julian joined them in the center of the barn and began to tinker with various implements, sniffing the vials, thumbing the equipment, studying each and every contraption, even as Saxon reached out to his brother telepathically.
Santos, brother, tell me you found something in that phone. An address, a God's forsaken address. What the hell is Owen's last name, and just how deviant is the human bastard?
He had been in such a hurry when he had taken Kyla's memories that he had forgotten to expunge some very basic details.
I'm working on it, brother.
Santos's calm, methodical voice echoed back.
His last name is Green, Owen Green, but he's not in any state or federal system. No driver's license, he doesn't pay taxes, and I haven't been able to find as much as a phone bill or a property deed. He doesn't have a criminal record.
Saxon sighed.
I'm hacking into everything I can think of, brother, and I'm still pulling texts from the phone. What's up?
He added soberly.
You sound like you're ready to blow a gasket.
Saxon clenched his hands into fists.
We tracked the van all the way to a barn, but she isn't here. No one is here. And this shit, Santos, this shit is jacked up. Xavier tortured the crap out of her here, in this place. And someone, something, is torturing her now. Or worse. I can feel it in my bones.
He almost choked over his next unthinkable words.
She's dying, Santos. I can feel my own life force slipping away.
The connection went eerily silent. And then Julian's harsh voice filled the void.
Saxon.
Saxon spun around to face the tracker, noticing a jagged, broken vial resting in the vampire's hand.
The blood,
Julian said brusquely.
It's Kiera's.
Saxon glanced upward toward the heavens, his heart expanding in gratitude, his senses coming alive with purpose.
Blood.
Life-giving, all-sustaining, immortality-enhancing blood. It would contain Kiera's DNA. And destiny or no, there wasn't a vampire alive who couldn't track another soul by the anima in their blood. He practically dove across the warehouse, snatched the vial from Julian's palm, and poured what was left of the contents down his throat, afraid that he might have missed a drop or that the meager teaspoon he had swallowed would not be enough. He crushed the glass in his hand, shoved it into his mouth, and chewed it down to dust, swallowing every last fragment without hesitation. His aorta thrummed, his veins exploded with knowledge, and his consciousness filled with smells, impressions, and sounds.
Blessed Prince Jaden. She had waist-length blonde hair just like Kyla's, only Kiera's was thicker, silkier, and more vibrant. She smelled of lavender and vanilla. Her heart was kind and compassionate, and she could play the strings off a violin. She was an absolute virtuoso. His chest heaved, his stomach quivered, and his legs nearly buckled beneath him.
Someone had carved obscenities into her flesh, and they had also slit her wrist. And someone else... No, several others, dressed in dark, ridiculous robes, were about to violate her, while her life slipped away beneath them.
Follow me,
he hissed, locking onto the signal like a beacon. And then he released his wings, leaped into the air, and shot straight through the roof of the barn.
Oh, and Nathaniel,
he snarled telepathically, knowing the predator was renowned for torturing his prey.
Don't kill anyone quickly. Take your sweet damn time.
29. Kiera grew weaker and weaker as a cold, clammy hand, someone's cruel, calloused fingers, wrenched her panties off her hips, slid them down her thighs, and cut them away from her ankles. She couldn't tell which of the vampire hunters, John, Nick, or Mike, had elected to violate her first, or if they were still planning to do it together. And honestly, it didn't matter. The abrasive heavy metal music in the background was growing increasingly faint, and the lyrics no longer made sense. The band may as well have been singing in Chinese. While she could still feel sensations, the room was freezing, and her wrist was burning like someone had soaked it in acid. She could no longer register fear. Her emotions were dull, gray, and fading.
Yeah, she thought she heard Owen rasp. Just like that, Mike. Remove her gag. I want to hear her groan.
And then someone must have turned up the music. The electric guitar sounded more like an explosion, a door flying off the hinges, a window crashing inward, the side of a wall imploding. The lead vocalist, or maybe it was one of the vampire hunters, sounded like he was screaming, and the bass drum ricocheted off the walls like the spray of random bullets. There was a gruesome crackle, like flesh, bone, and cartilage bursting, followed by a heavy thump, but Kiera didn't care. The weight had been removed from her body, and she was grateful. Besides, the chaos and madness all around her were somehow ironically soothing, if not oddly poetic. She thought she heard a distant whisper.
Oh, Yubito, forgive me for not stopping this.
And then she felt the palm of someone's hand, warm, soft, and inviting, play along the slope of her cheek. A pair of soft, malleable lips pressed against her inner wrist, worshipping the strange, inexplicable markings, and soothing the deep, vertical wound.
Kiera.
That voice, that sonorous tenor, it was magic.
Hold on, angel. Hold on.
Kiera tried to reach toward the light, toward the origin of that voice. It had to be a guardian angel, someone welcoming her soul into heaven. But her wrists were still linked to the chains. Then, just like that, the cuff seemed to crumble, and her ankles were removed from the leather straps. Her head lolled back, and she sighed.
Ah, that felt nice. So much better.
She felt something thick, wet, and sticky glomming to her wrist, and she absently wondered what it was. And then it occurred to her. The sexual violation was not as brutal as she'd feared. In fact, she couldn't even feel it. Apparently her soul was slipping away, and she was not going to experience the horror.
Hang on, Yubito. Please, hang on,
someone urged her, and her body began to twitch. She absently licked her lips. They were so very dry. She would have given her right arm for a glass of water.
Kagan's on his way,
she thought she heard someone utter, in a voice much silkier than any of her captors, and her eyes drifted shut.
She doesn't have time. She's almost gone.
That pure masculine drone again, her guardian angel speaking.
I have to convert her, right here and right now.
What strange, mysterious language. Someone whispered something in a foreign, unidentifiable tongue, and then asked if Kiera could survive it. Survive what? She wondered. But then the thought dissipated. More words in the background.
It's the only chance she has,
that silky masculine legato. Her guardian angel caressed her chest with a soothing paternal touch, the pads of his fingers rotating in circles just above her heart, and then he bent his ear to her mouth and listened, as if measuring her breaths.
Son of a jackal,
he cursed. Were angels allowed to do that?
Bring her a blanket, and turn that blasted music off.
Another thump, and then Kiera gasped and gurgled, which seemed to spur the angel into action.
He dove onto the table, sidled up behind her, and grasped her naked body by the waist, tugging her backward against him. What kind of heaven was this? It felt jarring, painful, disconcerting. And then he locked one arm around her torso like a vest. No, a straitjacket. Brushed her sweat-soaked hair to the side, and rotated his thumb along the length of her neck. What the heck?
No.
No, don't do that, she thought. He was scraping something over her jugular, something like teeth, or fangs.
No,
she shouted, louder this time, struggling to project her voice. He didn't care. He didn't stop. He wasn't an angel at all. In fact, it sounded like he snarled. As his fangs sank deep into her artery, jolting her awake with shock, Kiera struggled mightily to escape the implacable hold. It was no use. And then something. Oh, dear God, make it stop. Something like venom from a wasp or poison from a snake entered her bloodstream with the force of a freight train, pumping at a velocity that was certain to rupture her veins, setting her tissues and her flesh on fire. No. No. Please. Please, no. There was no way she could endure such agony. What had she ever done to deserve this? As the poison became a blaze and the blaze became an inferno, roiling like volcanic lava, assailing her body from the inside out, Kiera gave way to true, unadulterated panic for the first time that night. Yes, she had already suffered the unimaginable. And yes, she had somehow managed to endure the unendurable. But this was something else. This was her body, her mind, and her eternal soul, all going up in flames. As the reality of her fate became inevitable, inescapable, Kiera slipped away into madness. Her angel wasn't an angel at all, and she hadn't died and gone to heaven. Somehow, some way, Kiera had descended into the bowels of hell, and the devil himself had claimed her. She screamed until her throat turned raw, and then she screamed some more. The moment the vampires arrived at the urban five-story warehouse, they realized that Kiera was being held captive, and worse, on the top fifth floor. Santos had already sent the blueprints from the city's industrial archives. Julian had used his supernatural heat sensors to get a bead on all the occupants, and Nathaniel had already devised a hasty plan. They didn't have a moment to waste. The tracker entered through the front elevator doors, spraying the ceiling with bullets in order to startle the human hunters. Nathaniel crashed through a window and immediately attacked the nearest human, while Saxon plowed right through the median wall, landing stealthily in the living room, where he dropped into a low, lethal crouch. The first thing he saw stole his breath. Kiera, strapped to a stainless steel table, naked, dying, and about to be raped by a goon in a black hooded robe. Saxon dove across the room, his rage exploding as the scene unfolded in slow motion. In a classic uppercut, the fist connects with the underside of the jaw, snapping the victim's head back and causing the prey to stagger backward, assuming the punch is powerful, brutal, and targeted. In Saxon's case, he flew to the head of the table, threw a targeted, brutal uppercut against Kiera's assailant's jaw, and his fist impaled the human's larynx, eviscerated his ears, nose, and throat, and exited through the top of his cranium, beheading him in the process. Saxon brought his arm down to his side, peeled the skull off his forearm like a glove, and tossed it to the warehouse floor with a thump. Then he pried the body off Kiera and flung it across the room. Staring down at his destiny for the very first time, he nearly gasped in wonder. Kyla and Kiera weren't just twins. They were identical. Same color hair, same color eyes, same height and body build. Only Kiera was so much more resplendent. Even in her battered state, her hair was more luxurious. Her features were far more sculpted, and her beauty shined from the inside out. She was also hovering perilously close to death. Saxon took a hurried step back and scanned her body to make note of her injuries, trying to discern what he needed to treat first. Then he grimaced, snarled, and shook from head to toe.
"Oh, Yubito," he whispered beneath his breath. "Forgive me for not stopping this."
Her torso had been butchered, her wrist had been slit, and she had clearly endured this insanity for hours. Stepping forward, he sank to his destiny's eye level, placed the palm of his hand against the side of her cheek, and gently caressed her skin. He turned his attention to her trussed left wrist and sighed at the visage of the celestial markings. Pure, clear, and ornamental, they had obviously been enchased by Lord Cetus himself. He closed his eyes, pressed his lips to the insignia, and then swirled his tongue over the deep vertical wound in a primal response, born of instinct.
Kiera.
He spoke softly, opening his eyes and breathing her name like a prayer.
Hold on, angel. Hold on.
His female tried to reach toward his voice, in a weak, almost unconscious gesture, but the cuffs around her wrists would not allow it. Saxon growled, feeling bestial and savage. He wanted to kill them all by himself, but he dared not leave her side, not even for a moment. Restraining his feral impulse, he placed both palms over the vile cuffs, each at the end of a chain, and curled his fingers inward until the metal crumbled to dust, all the while continuing to scan her belly, her thighs, and her limbs, still trying to triage her injuries. She was so very weak, and she had lost so much blood. He had no idea what to do first. How in the hell was he going to keep her alive until Kagan Silavasi could get there? He hastily removed the leather straps from her ankles because her toes were rapidly turning blue. Her head lolled back and she sighed, or maybe she groaned, and Saxon nearly came unglued. He didn't know if he was helping her or hurting her, and the gods knew he felt helpless all the way down to his bones.
Lord Cetus, please help me.
He couldn't think.
Concentrate, Saxon, he told himself. Focus like a sentinel, and quit reacting as a terrified male.
Rolling his head on his shoulders to relieve some tension, he shook out his hands and consulted his reason. The greatest threat to her life was the continual loss of blood, but he didn't have the means to give her a transfusion. She was human, and she was too weak to feed. Kagan would have to do it. Filling his palm with venom, he coated the gash on her wrist. The substance would cauterize the injury, and that would at least staunch the bleeding. All the while, he cringed at the sight of her morbid injuries. Such heinous violations. The treble clef on her right thigh, the bass clef on her left, and the grisly violin carved into her stomach, chest, and breasts. The bastards had really done a number on her.
Hang on, Yubito. Please, hang on,
he urged her. Her body began to twitch, and she licked her lips.
Kagan's on his way,
Nathaniel grunted, approaching the side of the table with the head of a bald guy hanging from one hand, and a bloody set of private anatomy dangling from the other. The heavy metal music in the background accentuated the gruesome visage. Saxon nodded, watching as Kiera's beautiful brown eyes drifted shut.
She doesn't have time,
he argued, every nerve in his body protesting the truth.
She's almost gone.
His heart sank in his chest as inevitability slammed into him.
I have to convert her. Right here, right now.
There was truly no other way. Nathaniel whistled low beneath his breath and whispered a prayer in Romanian.
Do you think she's strong enough to survive it?
Saxon shut his eyes, shoving his fear aside.
No,
he answered, his voice barely audible.
I don't believe she is, but I still have to try. It's the only chance she has.
Pressing the pads of his fingers above Kiera's left breast, Saxon felt the strength of her heartbeat. It was so very weak. So very weak. He bent his ear to her mouth and measured her waning breaths.
Son of a jackal,
he cursed.
Nathaniel, bring her a blanket and turn that blasted music off.
He knew what he had to do. Nathaniel dropped the various chunks of the human's anatomy on the floor and stalked toward the bedroom, eager to do whatever he could. Kiera gasped, and then she gurgled, and it sounded far too much like a dying breath. Saxon sprang into action.
To hell with it.
There was no time to wait, not for the gods, not for Nathaniel, and not for Kagan Silavasi. It was time to man the hell up. He flew onto the table, sidled up behind her, and grasped her by the waist.
tugging her back against him, all the while chanting in his head, "I'm sorry, my love. I'm so, so sorry. Please don't leave me, not now."
He knew the transformation, if the god showed him favor and it worked, was going to be unspeakably brutal. Normally such things took hours, and even then they were harrowing. But this, the way he had to go about it, fast, furious, and unrelenting, it was nothing short of unconscionable. Shoving the thoughts out of his mind, they weren't going to save his destiny. He locked one arm around her chest, brushed her sweat-soaked hair to the side, and rotated the pad of his thumb along her carotid artery, feeling for the perfect entry. Releasing his sharp incisors, he scraped them back and forth along her neck until he was comfortable with the angle.
"No!"
Kiera shouted, catching him off guard. He tightened his grip and snarled. As his lips drew back from his gums, he sank his incisors into her flesh and formed a tight, unbreakable seal over the punctures. She jolted. She squirmed. She came awake with a shout, and he clamped his thighs around her. "Forgive me, Yubito," he wished he could whisper as she twisted and turned, arched and bucked, trying to escape his hold. It just didn't matter. Nothing but his venom mattered. As her thrashing turned to panic, and her panic became madness, Saxon continued his relentless assault, destroying the broken remnants of her human body in order to bring her back as a vampire. Kiera screamed so hard her throat sounded raw, and then she screamed some more. All the while, Saxon hardened his heart, tuned out the distraction, and increased the flow. He would never stop. He would never let up. He would convert her, and she would be successfully converted, or they would both die trying.
30. The next night, 24 hours later. When Kiera opened her eyes, she was groggy, hazy, and disoriented, but she no longer felt any pain. In fact, she was soaking in a bathtub full of sweet-smelling salts and luxurious bubble bath, and her body felt divine, healthy, strong, invincible, healed. She glanced around the room. It still looked curiously like Owen's warehouse, but that couldn't be the case. There was no debris scattered in the tub, and when she glanced down at her body, she didn't see any scars. Her hands, wrists, and chest were flawless. She swept the bubbles aside and peeked at her stomach, her thighs, and her feet. They were perfect, too. In fact, her skin was positively glowing. She turned her head lazily to the side and smiled. Oh, dear Lord. She had definitely died and gone to heaven. Kneeling beside the bathtub was the single most beautiful angel or saint or Elysian god her eyes had ever seen. While it was impossible to be sure with him kneeling like that, he had to be at least 6'2" or 6'3", with gorgeous hazel eyes the color of caramel, and pale ash hair that was neat on the sides, wispy at the front, and elegantly tapered along a strong masculine neck. His jaw was chiseled and angled, so was his perfect chin, and the soft dark goatee that framed his mouth in a silken shadow was so manicured it looked pristine. His features, seriously, who looked like that, were positively flawless. His almond-shaped eyes were wide set beneath perfect dark brows. His nose and his cheekbones were a fine work of art. And those lips, those sensual, full, expertly sculpted lips, turned slightly out and up in all the right places. He oozed carnality, exuded masculinity, and radiated primal swagger. He was quite simply the most exquisitely handsome man Kiera had ever laid eyes on. And he was staring at her like she was the only planet in his galaxy. He reached across the bubbles and brushed his thumb along her lower lip in a possessive, sensual gesture.
"How are you feeling, Yubito?"
Yubito. She had heard that word before, but she couldn't quite place it. She cleared her throat to test her voice, then immediately took note of her nudity, gathering a host of clustered bubbles and sweeping them up to her neck to cover her naked breasts. He chuckled, and the sound was like music.
I'm dead, I guess, she squeaked.
And this?
She glanced around the room. It still looked like Owen's bathroom.
This is heaven?
He shook his head and smiled.
No, Kiera. You are still on Earth, with me.
She frowned. Her mind was still full of cotton.
I don't understand,
she whispered, not sure if she wanted any answers. She just wanted to float in the water, luxuriate in the sweet-smelling salts, and lose herself in his possessive gaze. For the first time in days, she felt safe, content, completely at peace. He rocked back leisurely, planted his weight on his butt, and wrapped two muscular arms around his knees.
What do you remember, Angel, from the last 24 hours?
Kiera furrowed her brow.
Nothing really?
She tried to think.
I remember dying. I remember Owen.
She shot up in sudden alarm, sending water sloshing over the rim of the tub.
Oh, God, I remember Owen, and Mike and John and Nick.
She glanced hastily around the room.
Where are they?
Her guardian angel growled, almost like a prowling lion, and something lethal flashed through his eyes.
Mike, John, and Nick are no longer with us. They no longer inhabit this earth. And Owen, well, let's just say he's hanging out somewhere near the top of the ceiling, awaiting my devoted attention.
Kiera gulped.
Shh, Yubito. The angel whispered. There is no need for concern. I am with you, and you are safe. Nothing and no one will harm you.
Kiera licked her bottom lip, trying to make sense of his words, and then the most basic of questions finally surfaced.
Who are you? What are you? Are you my guardian angel?
He smiled, radiating warmth like the sunrise at dawn. Leaned toward the tub and gently reached for her hand. Then he kissed the center of her palm and closed his eyes, but only for a moment.
I am definitely your guardian angel. But no, that is not my species. My origin. Kiera, I am Vampyr, a member of an ancient species that has walked the earth for over 2,800 years. And my name is Saxon.
She whispered ominously, putting the pieces together.
Your name is Saxon, isn't it?
He nodded and her hand rose to her mouth, covering her sharp inhalation.
Then you're real,
she mumbled into her palm.
And you were with Kyla.
He nodded once again.
Yes, on both counts.
This time she was the one who closed her eyes. She needed a moment to think.